On the Canadian football theme, let's start with there was a football game that happened in Canada yesterday. It was the Packers and the Raiders. I like that they went just the opposite way. Like, the CFL has the longer, wider field, so the NFL overcompensates and goes with an 80-yard football field for the Canadian fans.
Yeah. Not a pretty picture there in Winnipeg last night, I would say.
No. What the hell was that?
Well, you know, they don't. I understand that if, from the perspective of the NFL, if there's anything, like, they got no stake in this, right? It's an independent promoter putting on the show. Preseason games are, you know, glorified practices. You run out the first stringers for a series or two normally, except they didn't even do that last night, and then you run through that, you know, the vast roster of guys who were hoping to stick on the taxi squad or something. It's not. There's nothing much in it for them. They don't care about the building a market in Canada or in Winnipeg specifically. They are what they are. They are the great God NFL on TV, and that's all that matters to them. So I would, you know, I don't want one of my guys stepping in that hole I guess it would have been a bump where the Canadian Football League goalposts would have been and blown out a knee. I don't care who the guy is. So yeah, I understand where they're coming from, saying zero risk. We don't want to care. We don't care. Let's just get to the end of this thing. And yeah, the optics are a little, you know, there's a story on ESPN this morning about it, so it's a little embarrassing. But yeah, I kind of know where they're coming from. It is odd to me that this was not figured out in advance. That, you know, somebody didn't go up there, poke around the field, say, how are you going to convert this? Say, hang on, there's a hole there. How are you going to fill the hole? What's it going to look like after you filled the hole? Yeah, it seems, but again, maybe that tells you again just how, you know, how little anybody cares about this, right? It's an Oakland Raiders preseason game. They sell it to a guy in Winnipeg. It's found money for them. So, yeah, they scrimmage on an 80-yard field. You know, no, it's just, but if I paid $300 in Winnipeg to watch even worse players than I thought were going to play on a makeshift field, I might feel that I had been played for a sucker, but of course they were played for a sucker in the beginning because they paid $300 to watch an NFL preseason game.
And that's the part of this. I'm in a CFL group chat with a few CFL fans, and there was talk about, all people talking about how big the NFL is compared to the CFL. This has nothing to do with the popularity of the NFL. This wasn't even like NFL 2.0 trying to grow the game in another market. This was the Raiders are barely playing home games for the preseason because their home doesn't want them there. So let's go literally almost anywhere else and just get this thing over with.
Yeah, like that's, and I know where you're coming from, because this whole idea of treating it as kind of a referendum, you know, CFL versus NFL, that whole dynamic. Again, I resist that dynamic to start with, you know, and again, you guys know I grew up, I'm a CFL guy, grew up watching the Ticats in Hamilton. I still watch the Ticats. I also grew up watching the NFL on television, you know, watching the Green Bay Packers or watching the Cleveland Browns or watching the New York Giants or whatever the game of the week was. And I, again, for some strange reason, I didn't feel like it was a loyalty test. You know, that, you know, if I watched the NFL, I was being disloyal, or if I watched the Canadian Football League, I was being more patriotic. And you know, it's football, right? I like football. It's different football. They're two different games. One, you know, you can argue about the rules, I guess, you know, whether which set of rules are better, which set of field is better. But I've had a great time watching both games. I've covered both games. I've covered, you know, I think I've attended 25 Super Bowls. I probably attended the same number of Grey Cups.
Wow.
You know, it's fine. I think, but the people have turned this into, well, not like, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, who dismiss the CFL in Canada and say, well, I would not watch inferior football. And clearly this is the superior football in the NFL, which is, again, a silly argument. The best talent is in the NFL. There's no question. But, you know, the other one is a local option with different rules. It's not quite like, you know, watching MLS versus watching a Premier League. But the thing is, you watch both, right? If you like soccer, you watch both. And, you know, and then the flip side of it is this whole, you know, look, the NFL staged a ridiculous exhibition game and not a lot of people came out. Therefore, it proves really that the NFL isn't popular in Canada. The NFL's really popular in Canada. You know, it's killing the CFL TV-wise in terms of, at least in terms of culmination events. The Super Bowl outdraws the Grey Cup, even though the Grey Cup used to be that, you know, one of the great kind of pillar posts of Canadian television. It's changed. CFL ratings are down this year across the board. People do like the NFL in Canada. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So I say it's just this chatter. It's a one-off. It's sort of like the Bills in Toronto series, which was, you know, presented as even more of a referendum because, of course, Toronto aspired to an NFL team. There are lots of people in Toronto who aspire to having an NFL team there. And it was like, well, here's the litmus test. If they support this or if they don't support this, that'll tell you whether they would support an NFL team in Toronto. It's two different things. You know, even with regular season games, it's two different things. I don't know that we're going to have an NFL team in Canada anytime soon. But if we did, it wouldn't be the end of the world. And, you know, it'd be kind of fun. It's like, I'd be happy to. I go to games in Buffalo, you know, try and avoid being vomited on by people in Buffalo. But, but why not, right? Like, you can be a patriotic Canadian, you know, or a cultural nationalist and still spend Sunday afternoon watching NFL games. It's not disloyal.
The Bills and Toronto series did not work as well as I thought it would, as they anticipated it would, but let's face it, Rogers Centre is a horrible venue for football, CFL, NFL. Do you think there'll ever be an NFL team in Canada, and more specifically Toronto? And the reason I ask isn't because I don't think it would be an issue. I think it would work really well. They'd have to build a stadium, obviously. But I do wonder if the NFL would protect the Buffalo market. It's a big TV market for them. The Bills draw a lot of people from the Niagara region specifically, but even, you know, getting into the GTA. So do you think the NFL will ever put a team in Canada and in Toronto?
Well, first of all, I think the Rogers Centre isn't a terrible venue for football when it's full of people. It's actually just fine, especially when the roof's open. It can be it's a totally acceptable venue for football when the roof's open and there are people there. If you're sitting there with, you know, 14,000 people in a 50,000-seat building, it feels kind of creepy.
I just felt far from the field when I was there.
Well, it's not ideal. It's not, you know, it's the seats aren't vertical enough in the lower deck. And, you know, that's a problem. That's a problem for football. It's a problem because of the sight lines. You'd rather have it more vertical, but it's better that way for baseball. You know, it's the problem of a multi-purpose stadium. It's really hard to make a stadium that works for both. But I've been in worse stadiums in the United States watching NFL games, I would say. You know, maybe not the state-of-the-art ones we're seeing now, but certainly back in the day, yeah. You know, I think the best chance for an NFL team to wind up in Toronto was when Ralph Wilson died and the Bills were in play. And yeah, Buffalo is a loyal football market, but it's not a rich market. It's a small market. They sell real tickets to real people for real money. There's not a lot of corporate money there. There's not a lot of private box money there. And Toronto is the fourth largest market in North America, or the third largest market in North America, and there's loads of money there. But, you know, the Pegulas basically stepped up and outbid everybody. You know, there were Canadian bidders for that team, and I know they paid lip service to the idea of keeping them in Buffalo, but that was not the plan. And I think had they outbid anybody in Buffalo, I think the Bills would be at least playing halftime in Toronto now, probably, and there'd probably be a new stadium under construction. But when that passed, I don't know, like, you know, there doesn't seem to be any great appetite to expand in the NFL. They've got a kind of a logical, symmetrical setup in terms of the number of teams and where they are. There are no teams in obvious peril right now. You know, now that the Raiders are going to move to Vegas, there's nobody, you know, maybe Jacksonville, but, you know, they might end up in London. You know, they're playing games in London already, and I think the NFL thinks that is more of an enticing option than Toronto. I always thought it would happen in my lifetime. You know, I just thought it was an economic inevitability because of the amount of money in Toronto, because of how big the market was, and because the NFL still had teams in some backwaters. You know, Jacksonville's a backwater, Green Bay's a backwater, Buffalo's a backwater. But the moment passed, and I think when that moment passed, it's just hard to see now. You know, $1 billion for a stadium, a couple $1 billion for a team. Yeah, I'm just not sure. No appetite to spend public money. I'm not sure how it happens now. If it did happen, I think it would be wildly successful. But I'm not sure it's going to happen now.
The team that currently plays in the Rogers Centre, the Blue Jays, swept by the Dodgers, back-to-back walk-off losses after losing by a couple touchdowns in the first game. But Jacob Wegespack kind of stealing the headlines yesterday. Do you think he's someone we could see on the big league roster again next year in the starting rotation?
Well, he's sure going to get a chance, you know, and that's not something, if you'd asked me a month ago, I don't think I would have believed that. You know, first, yeah, I guess if there's anything, such anything as a good sweep, you know, they went in, first game was awful, but they played really well against the best team in what I think is right now the best team in baseball, or the second best team in baseball. You know, that's got something to play for, and they pitched well, and they played good defense, and they generated a bit of offense off some great starting pitching. So, you know, it's in a lost season like this, you look at a series like this, you know, it's, yeah, you go 0-3, but those last two games were encouraging, especially because last night, you know, they didn't, Ken Giles wasn't there, the bullpen's in a bit of a shambles. You know, in a normal circumstance, you probably could have closed that game out and handed Jacob Wagius back the win and would have felt pretty good about it. You lose, it doesn't feel great, but it's not the end of the world. But, yeah, he's, you know, they got a bunch of guys like Jacob Wagius back, you know, in AAA and AA, who are not blue chippers. You know, Wagyuspack was is an afterthought guy, a college guy. You know, no one thought anything of him. They got him in the Aaron Loop deal, which is, you know, that's a gift, right? You're not trying, you don't expect to get anything for half a season of Aaron Loop. And, you know, he's been more successful in the big leagues than he was in AAA, which is interesting. You don't see that very often. But you know what? He's got a mid-90s fastball. You know, it's kind of 94, 95, which these days is not overwhelming, but you can get away with it. He's got five or six pitches that he can use. And the main thing I think I would say about him watching him this during this stretch is he's smart. You know, he really knows how to pitch. You know, he's kind of the opposite of Sean Reed Foley. Like Sean Reed Foley's got a better arm than Jacob Wagner's back, but Sean Reed Foley doesn't know how to pitch. And, you know, the mental part of the game right now eludes him, I would say. But Jacob Wagner's back, you know, again, pitching against a crazy good lineup last night, you know, he outsmarted guys in at-bats. And, so you're not blowing 98 past them, but you're outthinking them. And I think, you know, I give Danny Jansen some credit, too. You know, they outthought that Dodgers lineup for seven innings. So that's super impressive. You know, he's not going to be your number one, but maybe he's your number three or four, you know, and you need a number three or four. So, yeah, a pleasant surprise. And, you know, that front office takes a kicking from a lot of fans, kind of a lot of it's knee-jerk, but you know, as of today, they've already won that deal. You know, even if Jacob Wagnersback never pitches in the majors again, they already won that deal.
Because the Blue Jays haven't been able to bring in those blue-chip prospects when dismantling those two teams that went to back-to-back ALCSs or in more recent trades for Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez, are the lottery ticket guys like Jacob Wagnersback the ones that they need to work out? I mean, not all of them are going to cash in, but do they need two or three of those guys to really work out for them to take the next step?
Well, I think every team does, right? And, you know, in terms of they didn't have guys ready to, you know, if they had dismantled the 2016 team immediately, I'm not sure who would have played in 2017. You know, because the young players we're all excited about right now were not ready, and there was not another generation of guys ready to step in there. You know, that's because they drained the farm system to a degree in some of those deals, and it's also because they didn't draft and develop particularly well during the Alex Anthopoulos years. There was a gap. So you were waiting. You know, you're waiting on the guys we're seeing now, and that's part of the reason I think they didn't do the teardown, which also would not have been very popular right after a playoff season. You know, and in terms of kind of, you know, in terms of the Stroman deal and the Sanchez deal, you can't, like, let's see if those guys are blue chip, because they think they are. You know, they think the guys they got in those two deals, you know, Kay has been pitching really well in AAA. He'll be up in September. The main, you know, one of the pieces they got in the Stroman deal. The other guy they got in the Stroman deal is, you know, is very young and very raw, but he's the one with bigger potential. You know, the Sanchez return is not great. I don't think anybody thinks that return is great. But you know, you're not gonna know, you know, for a couple of years whether the two guys they got from the Mets, what they're gonna, well, I think with Kay you're gonna know pretty soon. But look, I think every team, I don't care how good you are, how smart you are, how good your farm system is, like, you can look at that Houston Astros roster, you can find some, you know, and they're, you know, they lost 100 games 3 years in a row to get there. And they're the smartest guys in the world with analytics, and they draft and develop really well, and they fix other guys' problems really well. But there's guys in there who were not, you know, top 50 MLB pipeline guys. You know, those ratings are kind of remember, the other thing to remember, those ratings are arbitrary. You know, they're done by humans. They're who have less knowledge than the people running the teams. Sometimes we get too caught up in where a guy is on a top 10 prospect list or a top 100 prospect list. You know, there's a lot of guys who are top 10 prospects on and out, cracked the top 100 who, you know, became big league players. Big league, you know, that's an average big league player is a great baseball player. So if Jacob Wagyusbeck turns out to be a league average starter, like, that's a huge win. Mm-hmm. It's a huge win to have a guy like that for Aaron Loop.
Listening to our afternoon show with Ryan Pinder and Pat Steinberg yesterday, they asked Adnan Virk a really interesting question. And I'm not sure it was a question that would have been worth asking 6 weeks ago, certainly not 6 months ago, but I'll put you on the spot here. If you had to pick one of, you can't have both, but if you had to pick one of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Bo Bichette to have for the next 5 years, who would you pick?
That's a great question. You know, because there are, you know, look, Vladdy is a freak, right? He has freakish ability. And I think we've just seen the tip of the iceberg in terms of what he can do in the major leagues. I think all of the hype around him is legit. And I think as he figures things out, you're going to see a guy who is going to put up, you know, some crazy numbers. I would almost guarantee it. There are two X factors with him. One is, can he play third base? And I think the jury's out. You know, he made a really nice play last night. He does make some nice plays, but can he play third? And the other is going to be his body. You know, he's a big kid. Will he do what he has to do to stay in the kind of shape that will allow him to be durable and have a long major league career? Or will he break down? So there's the X factors with him. The X factors with Bichette, I'm not sure he's a shortstop, but I think he probably is now. He's convinced me. He's not Vladdy in terms of natural ability, but I'm not sure how many players are. He's super smart, super confident. It's hard to look at a guy like him and not think that he's going to have a really good, long major league career one way or another, whatever position he plays at. I just think that, you know, Vladdy has the potential to be the best player in baseball. Whether he gets there or not, you know, who knows? And there are a lot of great young players out there right now, Acuna and Soto and Tatis Jr., and there's some amazing young players right now. But I think he has the ability to be an MVP. Maybe Bo Bichette has that too. I think you're starting from a different place with Bo. And I love him to death. I think you'd have to kind of gamble on a guy who could be all world. And I think Vladdy could be all world.
Steven, I understand this is our last conversation with you in Newfoundland as you make a trip back to the center of the universe. When does the travel officially start?
I will be on an overnight ferry on Sunday, and sometime by about the middle of next week, I will return to. I need that time to prepare myself to be a big city jerk again. So it takes 3 days to kind of get that. You got to get the attitude back, right? I've kind of lost it here in 2 months, so. I'll be back, but I will be back in contact from Hamilton a week from today.
Steven, other than the people, what I miss most about Hamilton are two things. Lulu's Shawarma and the Greek Palace, which are right across the street from one another. Have you been to both of those or either of those establishments?
Yeah, they are. I have been to both. Yeah, they are. They would be highlights. You know, I was born in Hamilton, so I can give you a long, decades-long list of joints that I like to hang out in. Those are two local institutions.
Steven, look forward to chatting with you on Friday after your big city snob orientation is done later on this week.
looking forward to it. See you guys.
See ya.